And a US historian says the Bush administration's failure to plan for the aftermath of the military victory in Iraq in 2003 was not just an isolated case of an administration out of its depth. In his latest book, How Wars End, Gideon Rose concludes that the United States has not managed a smooth transition to peace in any of its wars of the last century. He says there's a serious disconnect between military and political strategies, and he warns that President Barack Obama also needs to lift his game and stop blaming the military for his problems. Gideon Rose took time out this morning from his book tour on the US West Coast to speak to The World Today. Gideon Rose, there's a lot written about why wars begin. Why do you think there's not so much about how they end?
Well, you know, wars actually have two sides to them. There's the part about beating up the enemy, the fight aspect, and there's the part about constructing a stable political settlement. And we focus on the former, the fight aspect, war is combat, and ignore the latter because it's really difficult. And the problem is that even though you don't want to think about it, it's there, and it comes back to meet you at the end of the day. And so you topple Saddam Hussein, and you find yourself in Baghdad at the end of the day, or you knock out the Taliban, and then you say, how are you going to stabilize Afghanistan? So we should think about the ends of wars. If you think about this political settlement as the key, then you'll think of the war as a countdown to that. But another reason is, as dangerous and risky as war as combat is, it's easier conceptually to think of a fight and beating up the enemy and countering him than it is to think about constructing some kind of political settlement.
That may explain why the military focus on the first phases of the war, but it doesn't excuse the political leadership, does it?
It doesn't excuse the political leaderships at all. They should be focusing on things. They just don't. And so they come up with these crazy theories that, oh, it'll be okay as long as we turn things over to Ahmad Shalabi or something like that. And it allows them to basically avoid dealing with the really tough choices they have to make.
Well, less well known than the Iraq situation, perhaps, is the debacle over negotiations to end the Korean War. It seems inconceivable that a disagreement over prisoners of war could keep the fighting going on there for so long and at such massive cost to lives on both sides.
I think the Korean case is a really interesting case because when you're talking about the Iraq case and the Bush administration, it's easy to mock George W. Bush and some of the stupid things that his administration did. But in cases like Korea, where you had Dean Acheson, one of the smartest policymakers around, or the Persian Gulf War with people like Brent Scowcroft and Colin Powell, when they get things wrong, it shows that it's not just stupid policymakers who make bad decisions, even smart ones can. In Korea, what Acheson did was they helped set a U.S. goal of voluntary repatriation for the communist prisoners in our hand without thinking about what the costs would be.
Because it kept the war going on for more than a year at the cost of more than 100,000 lives, didn't it?
Yeah, the Korean War should have ended. Everyone thinks about the dramatic events of the first year, and they don't ask themselves, gee, if everyone had agreed to a stalemate by the summer of 1951, why did the war itself not end until the summer of 1953? And it turns out there are all these interesting stories about these crazy policies that people covered up, actually, and they only came out with the archives later on. So the Korean case is fascinating, and in fact, every one of the wars in the book that I discuss turns out, once you look at the ends of wars, there are these fascinating stories that are out there, whether it's the Korean prisoners or the decision to leave Saddam Hussein in power at the end of the Gulf War or the question of whether to drop the bomb in World War II. You know, the ends of wars deserve more attention than they get.
Now, your book focuses on the United States. Do you think that the U.S. is particularly bad at ending wars well?
You know, it's certainly no better than anybody else, but it's hard to say it's necessarily worse. I mean, the Japanese and the Germans do a pretty bad job of planning for things as well. The only case I can think of where really you have a great planning that carefully links force to politics is not exactly salutary either. It's sort of Bismarck in the wars of German unification. The end result is a very strong Germany that causes problems later on. But it's hard, actually, I think, not just the United States, but for anybody to really link force to politics, and that's the real challenge in war.
It sounds odd that you say that's tough, because you would think that U.S. leaders would automatically see a war as a means to a political end. Otherwise, why start it?
Well, you'd think that. You'd think that, but and they often pay lip service to it. But What they tend to do is they tend to divide responsibility up. There's a tendency to think that you can avoid messiness by having civilians set the political goals, then turn things over to the military to do the actual combat operations, and then turn things back over to the civilian politicians and diplomats to deal with the post-war stuff. The problem is that you have to integrate things throughout, because there's no such thing as a purely military action.
Should the fact that the U.S. has, for most of the last century, been so much more powerful than other nations, should that not give it reason to actually end wars well, to do a better job of this than other nations?
You know, it should, but it turns out that power is kind of a mixed blessing. It creates opportunities. It allows you to do things. But it also allows you not to think too hard about what you're doing, because you can get away with it. Extreme power for a nation, it tends to lead the policymakers to be more careless and more reckless than they should be, because they get cocky. You see this again in the Bush administration in Iraq, and it's no surprise that one of your worst planned wars comes at a time of American unipolarity and hegemony, when basically you feel like you're strong enough to get away with everything, so you don't have to plan carefully.
Now, you say that your book's not just about the past, it's also about future policy and strategy. What lessons would you like future leaders to draw from your analysis?
Well, you know, in one sense, the lessons are pretty commonsensical, but in war, as in real life, common sense is actually very uncommon. But if there's one thing I would say, it's reverse the sequencing with the way you think about these things. If you think about the post-war state you want to achieve as phase one, and then you think of the actions in war as a countdown leading up to that, then that would put the emphasis where it should be.
Well, for President Obama in the Afghanistan conflict, of course, is it particularly difficult for him to put in a good end game because the war is already underway?
Absolutely. Basically, what Obama's got to do is decide whether he prefers the costs of staying or the risks of leaving. There is no perfect solution. And Obama's plan that he's put in place, this hybrid plan, it's not going to work. He's going to be confronted with the real choice next year, which is basically, should I stay or should I go?
We've seen that Obama has had some significant conflicts with his military leadership. Are you seeing any signs that he is learning some of the lessons that you think he should from your sort of analysis?
You know, I think that he understands that he needs to make decisions like this himself. But one of the things I was disappointed to see was the fact that he's almost blaming the military for the lousy choices he has. If he's getting rolled in Afghanistan, if he's keeping troops there, it's not because the military is trying to maneuver or manipulate him. So I think that Obama hasn't quite yet learned that the military aren't the bad guys. They're the guys who are your contractors. You have to tell them exactly what you want to do, and they'll tell you how to accomplish it.
So you're saying he hasn't actually established the political side of that equation and worked out what he wants to do?
Exactly. I think that he is still buying into a kind of sense that it was all George Bush's fault and it was all stupid policies. And the fact is, he's got to accept and own whichever nasty choice he ends up making.
Gideon Rose, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's historian Gideon Rose. Speak to me from San Francisco, where he's on a book tour to promote his latest book, How Wars End, A History of American Intervention from World War I to Afghanistan. And you can listen to a longer version of that interview on our website at abc.net.au/worldtoday.